everybody. It's Elise Gling sitting in for John Williams today. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're here this hour to talk you through all the business news of the day. Pete Zimmerman's our producer. We are kicking things off with Ted Rossman. He's the senior industry analyst of Bankrate. Hey, Ted, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you again. So 692,000 jobs for June, that seems to be kind of the number of the day. How do you feel about that number?
It exceeded expectations. I think that, you know, people are generally feeling pretty good about the progress the job market is making, you know, definitely hoping for even more. Something that I've been keeping a close eye on is what some people are dubbing the Great Resignation. Basically, a lot of people are in the market to switch jobs right now, and some of that is pent-up demand because we didn't see a lot of job switching during the bulk of the pandemic in 2020 and early 2021.
We saw a lot of job losing rather than job leaving, right?
Yeah, sadly we did, and that was especially in the service sector. And what we're really seeing now is a lot more of office workers actually interested in switching jobs. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with this whole work from home phenomenon. I think that the companies that are more flexible are going to be winning in the eyes of workers. A lot of people have decided that they don't want to go back to the office full time, and they're seeking out more flexible positions. That's not the only thing, of course, that's incentivizing people to switch. I think some people have also had an awakening that, you know, maybe they want to try out a different industry or they want to do a different kind of work. We're seeing some pretty big shifts right now.
No, I think that's interesting. And I know a number of, I mean, this is anecdotally, but a friend in New York told me yesterday that she feels like she stuck with her company and they made it through. And she feels like she's being woefully underpaid given what some of her friends in similar industries at similar levels are now being paid. She's looking for a job here in Chicago. Spoke with another person who said they're a little concerned in their law firm because people don't want to come back to the law firm. They don't want to do the commute. The train schedules in Chicago are all off. So it's like once an hour or you're driving and the traffic's gotten really bad. And so they all across the country, I think there's lots of reasons that people are looking for, you know, a switch.
There are, yeah. And I think it's going to be really interesting because we hear all this stuff about worker shortages. And in some cases, there are. It's maybe more of a mismatch than a true shortage. But we've seen that with a number of other industries as well. You know, it's hard to get a new car right now. It's hard to get a refrigerator. Lumber prices went way up, although now they've really fallen sharply over the past month. This gets back to that whole discussion about inflation. And is it temporary? Is it permanent? Is it something that we should worry about? I think there are growing signs that all of these imbalances are more temporary, but they're definitely percolating through the economy right now. So I actually think that a lot of workers have some bargaining power, especially if you've been fortunate enough to keep your job and you're in a stable financial situation. There are a lot of people that are able to push for more, whether that's more money, more responsibility, better title. Maybe just more flexibility. We're finding that a lot of people like the ability to work from home at least some of the time.
Yeah, no, I think that's really absolutely. In fact, a lot of companies even went virtual. You know, Ted, when you look at where the construction, where the gains are, for example, and we're going to talk with Lawrence Young, the chief economist of the National Association of Realtors, in a little bit later in the show. But, you know, hiring gains have really picked up in leisure and hospitality. Construction, however, has sort of stayed a little bit lower. And this month we saw construction payrolls increase by almost 50,000, which was up significantly. But we're still missing a lot of these industry workers. And I'm wondering if you think that these people who, you know, many of whom got laid off in the pandemic and have been at home, do you think they're going to come back here? Or do you think there are signs that they're looking elsewhere for other industries as well?
I think when we talk now about construction and manufacturing, I think that is really influenced by those shortages I was talking about. So not just workers, but also raw materials. It sounds like that is weighing on those sectors. Whereas you mentioned the sharp rebound in services, especially travel and hospitality, that makes sense because that's where a lot of the dollars are flowing right now. That was also the hardest hit sector, so there's still a lot of room for improvement, and we have not by any means regained all of the lost jobs there. But that's where we're seeing a lot of the increased consumer activity. We've seen with airlines, for example, several times this month, the TSA has processed more than 2 million passengers a day, and that represents a pandemic high. It's not back exactly to where it was in 2019, where a typical day this time of year maybe is more like 2.5 million or even a little bit more than that. But the point is that especially domestic leisure travel is rebounding. So I do think it's going to be a good summer for anybody in that ecosystem. So we're talking airlines, hotels, restaurants, you know, any sort of tourism or travel or hospitality. It's definitely a welcome change after the tough time they've had.
Yeah, I think it is. Ted Rossman is Senior Industry Analyst of Bankrate. Hey, Ted, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And one of my very favorite people, Jonathan Smoke, joins me now from Cox Automotive to talk about what's going on with the fact that nobody can find cars or houses to buy. Jonathan, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Oh, hey, Elise. It's good to be back with you, too.
So, listen, you know, I think last time we talked, which was sometime last year, we were talking about how there was a time shifting that had gone on in the leasing industry where normally people release their cars in the spring, but because of COVID, that got pushed to the fall. And then manufacturing stopped on new cars, so that got pushed to the fall. And you were telling me last year that we were going to have a shortage of new cars, and voila, here we are. People are running out of cars to buy. What's going on?
And that's right. I mean, we were anticipating that we were going to see an imbalance with extreme demand coupled with supply issues. But even the spring has turned out to be more dramatic than we anticipated, partially because, of course, the economy has come roaring back much more strongly than most people were expecting, especially this time last year. But then at the same time, the new vehicle production has just run into a perfect storm of events that seem to not end, because in fact, Detroit was impacted by flooding last week that hurt some inventory and actually hurt at least one factory there. So we're still not to the end of the supply chain woes.
Well, it's happening in other places as well. I mean, I know that there were some Tesla cars that were going to be delivered kind of unfinished. They were missing chips, and we're still having a chip shortage nationwide, aren't we?
That's right. And what we hear from the semiconductor industry and from those who are managing the supply chains in automotive, that it may not be until the end of next year that we really start to see production levels get back to normal, and certainly not even catch up. So you're hearing all kinds of stories of space being used to park vehicles that are mostly done, but are missing some critical components like semiconductors.
Or steering mechanisms in some cases, which is, yes, it's hard to imagine how you would steer the car. So when you're thinking about new cars, the other story I saw this week, and I'm sure you're seeing it, is that the average price is now above manufacturer's list price, that people are bidding up to get these cars the way they're bidding up to get houses. What are you hearing on the pricing side?
Yeah, definitely article in the Wall Street Journal today specifically about that. And, you know, we've got record tight supply and demand still very strong. And so it's causing a bit up in those prices. By the way, not unlike other goods, I have a nephew that has created an income stream trading PlayStation 5s for precisely the same reason.
You know, make sure he deposits money in his Roth IRA.
So we are seeing record prices set in the new vehicle market, coupled with lease discounting and more stories of people having to pay above sticker to get a vehicle that they really want. We've actually seen even higher increases in the used vehicle market because typically the used market does have more dynamic response than you see necessarily in the new vehicle market. So it's cascaded everywhere. We're definitely seeing consumers having to spend much more to buy a vehicle, but it's also happening at a time where the economy is awash in cash with bank accounts up still more than $3 trillion relative to where we were prior to the pandemic beginning because of all the saving that's taken place. And on the credit side, actually, consumers have been seeing better rates this year. And so, you know, the vast majority of vehicle purchases are financed. And so from a monthly payment perspective, actually, we're not seeing the same amount of inflation cascade through.
Well, that's actually good. And I was going to ask you about that because credit scores hit, I think, a new high as we went into this year, which was sort of amazing as people deleveraged and used all that government money to pay down their debt. And they didn't have to pay student loan debts. And in some cases, like for 5 million people, they didn't have to pay mortgages. So people were able to put themselves in a little better place. But when it comes to cars, sometimes people with low credit scores end up paying the most who can least afford it, right? And I'm just wondering what you're seeing. You know, sometimes this time of year, you start hearing about 0% financing deals. I assume that's all out the table. What are you seeing in terms of deals that might come about?
Actually, amazingly, it's still fairly attractive from a credit perspective. So far in June, we're tracking 6% of loan transactions on auto loans are featuring 0% deals, which is, you know, we were averaging about 3.5% prior to the pandemic. So it's still elevated, but it's nothing like the 21% we had in April of 2020. So there are fewer of those deals available as the supply situation has tightened so dramatically. And as you said, there's a big dichotomy between the interest rate that somebody with great credit pays for an auto loan and what somebody that's subprime pays for auto loan. And actually, we've seen subprime borrowers see the lowest rates of the year, most recently in May. And it's down much more from what it was last year because credit spreads have narrowed on auto loans because lenders are seeing strong loan performance, seeing a strong vehicle values, and it's encouraging them to back off of much wider spreads they were requiring a year ago. And that's helped on the payment side.
So if you don't think if the semiconductor industry says that it's going to be the end of next year, so, you know, fourth quarter 2022, before we kind of get things back to normal, does that mean that car manufacturing is not going to get back to normal until then as well? Is that when we're going to start seeing a flood of new cars hit the market?
No, what we're hearing is really that we should be nearing the end of the worst part of this. So it's just that for us to totally see the amount of semiconductors that the auto industry needs, it's likely going to be the end of next year before we're really humming at that pace. So likely we're almost at the end of the worst of this. But we're not going to see a dramatic turnaround in supply, most likely well past next year, because when we do start to see more supply available, you've got parts of the automotive market that have been choked off, like rental car companies would be buying every vehicle they could right now, but they can't get them because of the limited supply and the prioritization of retail on the part of manufacturers. So supply is going to remain constrained, which is very atypical for coming out of a recession, but that's the world we're going to live in.
You know, it's kind of interesting, the idea that we're going to have trouble renting cars and we're going to have trouble buying cars for a year and a half to 2 years after a two-month shutdown. It feels like 2 months, and then 2 months later we should be back up and running. But I imagine even though hiring was up this month, we just talked about this with the Bankrate analyst, Ted Rossman, you know, 692,000 jobs, I'm not sure that car manufacturers are hiring, or maybe they are trying to, but can't get anybody.
Oh, that's right. The bottleneck of labor exists in every corner of the industry. So whether it's a dealer trying to hire salespeople or service technicians, or it's in the factories, labor is one of those challenges that keeps, even if we had all the parts and supplies we need, we couldn't be fully back up to speed. So the labor issues definitely are here as well.
That's so crazy. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for breaking down the cars. It sounds like if you're looking for a car and you can hold out until next year, you're going to get a better deal than unless you really have to have a car this year, you might as well expect to pay over list. It seems like that may be the bottom line that we're all dealing with. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, it's always a little bit more complicated. Two things that I would point out. One, as I've been saying, the credit situation is actually very attractive right now, and the rates may not stay quite as low as we're seeing right now. So that's one thing. If you wait, you're sort of racing against what happens with interest rates. And the second is, while I can talk more broadly about supply being tight, that's not the case for every type of vehicle. So if you're in the market for a car right now, you can actually still find them, and you can find incentives on them. If you're looking for a full-size pickup truck, that's another story.
well, we'll have you back for an update on that. Fortunately, pickup trucks are not in my future, so I'm safe. Can't speak for everybody else who's listening. Jonathan Smoke, Chief Economist of Cox Automotive, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, great to be with you, Elise.
Lawrence Young joins me now from the National Association of Realtors, where he's chief economist. Lawrence, somebody I've talked to for I don't know how many decades. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hello, Elise. Thank you for having me on the show.
It's nice to have you with us. So these are heady times for real estate. I saw the S&P Case-Shiller number. It came out, and it looked like nationwide home prices were up an eye-popping over 14%. Could that possibly be correct?
So it's been an amazing market. The pandemic, the first few months during the lockdown, a tremendous amount of scare related to the housing is another foreclosure crisis looming. But what happened was that home sales just simply surged once the lockdown was lifted, and too many demand, not enough supply, and prices rising 15%, depending upon some markets, even up 25%. Quite an amazing run in the housing market.
So I remember when we were talking about this, you and I, last year, when people were really scared, but we were already, by April, starting to hear stories of people making their way out to the suburbs and people in the suburbs making their way out to rural America. It was almost like, let me find as much land as my money will buy. And we saw interest rates start to drop, this record-breaking 15 new lows, historic lows last year. It kind of came together for real estate to juice the market, didn't it?
So the part of the desire to own a larger size housing, and initially away from condominium, any high-density common sharing spaces, people say no, not in a COVID environment. By the way, the condominium market is making a strong comeback now with the progress on vaccination or people understanding how to prevent the spread. So the condominium market is coming back strongly, but initially it was all about the single family, away from the city centers, going out deep into the suburbs or even smaller towns.
People just aren't selling, though. I mean, this has been a problem for the last, I don't know, five or seven years for sure. Out here in the North Shore, we're seeing just almost record low numbers of homes in the market. There's a lot of homes that are being sold, not just in Chicago, which has really kind of lagged behind the nationwide home appreciation party for the last few years, but nationwide, there are very, very few homes still on the market. And then a lot of homes that seem to be getting sold privately, pocket listings, even though the realtors supposedly prohibited this, that seems to be going on. What's your take on why these listings just aren't even making it to the market?
First, we had the housing shortage before the pandemic, and the shortage simply exacerbated during it, which means that inventory is king. So anyone who's holding on to the inventory is good as gold. And some people, which we strongly advise, want to share only within their group. I think in some cases it's very running into a great area of even fair housing rules, because you are not providing equal opportunity, equal access for all consumers to potentially make a bid on those homes. So NAR, National Association of Realtors, strongly discourage any private listing. But this is occurring simply due to the fact that we don't have enough inventory. Builders are beginning to ramp up production, so I do anticipate more inventory in the later months of this year. And also the mortgage forbearance program, part of the stimulus measure for those people facing economic hardship, that could skip on mortgage payments. And during that period, they're not going to list their home. But that program is beginning to wind down. So we expect more listing coming from that as well.
But there aren't that many people left in that mortgage forbearance program, right? I mean, I think they're down to under 4% of people who have mortgages. So what are you looking at, under 2 million people who are still in that program?
In any given year, you are looking at about 10% of homeowners listing. So if it's 2 million people, that's 200,000 additional inventory. And certainly one thing our realtors have indicated is that in their local market, Chicago, elsewhere, that if they had 20% more inventory in the market, they would have 20% more transaction at more manageable prices from increased supply. So it will have an impact.
Yeah, it's interesting. The increase in pricing is just sort of, I said it earlier, eye-popping, that you could go up, you know, 10 or 15% in a year. What is, historically, remind everybody, what is the typical home price appreciation that economists and realtors have seen, you know, decade over decade?
It's usually 1 or 2% above consumer price inflation. Consumer price inflation, say it rises 2%, then home prices would rise 3 or 4%, just a tad over that number. Back in the 1970s, when the inflation rate, consumer price inflation rate, were at 10%, home prices were running 13, 14%. So it's a good indication that real estate, tangible asset, is a strong hedge against inflation. But right now, 15%, I would say that is eye-popping. I would not be surprised if there is a slight reduction in prices going forward. I'm not sure when, but it will be of very short duration because there is an army of potential buyers just waiting to get in, have that second chance opportunity after being outbid by others.
And just before we go, are you worried at all about interest rates going up? Because the one thing that could make this, I'm not going to call it a bubble because that seems to be a little, although honestly, if next year prices go up another 15%, I will call it a bubble. But, you know, interest rates are at historic lows. You know, they pop up a little bit. Prices are going to come down. Are you worried about that?
So the next year, I expect the price growth to moderate to back to the normal, meaning that maybe 3 or 4% annual price appreciation. And the reasoning for that is I do believe the mortgage rate will reach 3.5% by end of this year from current 3%. Now, these are only decimal points increases, but what we find is that anytime mortgage rate increases, even a few decimal points, it begins to pull some of the buyers out of the market. They're simply squeezed out. So slightly lowering of the demand from rising interest rate will begin to moderate price growth going into next year.
Well, we will see if you are right. Lawrence Yun is the chief economist of the National Association of Realtors. Lawrence, I'm looking forward to seeing you later this year at one of our conferences.
Great talking to you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. It is 12:44 and time for Steve Grzanich with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Wilson Sporting Goods has announced the location of its first brick-and-mortar stores, and one of them will be right here in its hometown of Chicago. The company will open a 2,200-square-foot store in mid-July in the Gold Coast neighborhood. Wilson is taking over the space at 932 North Rush. That space was previously occupied by Vineyard Vines. It's expected to be the first of many retail locations for Wilson. The physical locations will allow the company to showcase a new Wilson sportswear apparel line. Moody's Investors Service has upgraded Illinois' debt for the first time in more than 20 years. It upgraded its view on $33 billion worth of debt, thanks to what it calls material improvement in the state's finances. Moody's hasn't upgraded Illinois' debt since 1998. Other major ratings agencies have recently changed their outlook on Illinois debt to positive, stopping short of an actual upgrade. Governor Pritzker says he promised to restore fiscal responsibility, and the upgrade shows the state's finances are heading in the right direction. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And the business of food. Steve, what's going on there?
Hey, Elise, let's jump over to LaSalle Street, where corn and beans especially have been on fire the last 90 minutes after a USDA report came in showing the June acreage report and also the quarterly grain stocks report. And the average estimates for corn and beans came in under traders' expectations in terms of acreage. So less supply equals higher prices. And wow, corn is up 40 cents a bushel right now at 588.5. That's about 7.25% higher. Beans are up about 6.75 cents higher, 87 cents at 13.99. It wasn't that many years ago, two or three, that an 87 cent range in the price of beans was a full year, not one day. Wheat is trading about 27.5 cents higher at 6.73. By the way, in Illinois, 11.2 million acres of corn is in the ground, estimated, and 10.7 million acres of beans. Today's feature about business of food is about a woman who had a problem with oatmeal.
Every morning, I wish my oatmeal could be better.
Lynn Jiang, a University of Chicago graduate who came to the U.S. when she was 19, was on the road a lot doing management consulting, and she found the plain instant oatmeal too bland. And the other option,
Flavored instant oatmeal, is loaded with sugar.
And after seeing store shelves packed with different brands of the same thing, she decided to figure out how to make her own by tapping into her childhood in China.
So every day when I got home, my mom would give me a bowl of black sesame cereal, and it was so toasty, nutty, and that was my favorite food.
So in her Chicago kitchen, she blended Asian flavors and culture into Western-style instant oatmeal and came up with recipes that she took to work to try out on her coworkers.
And they all loved it.
From there, all Lynn had to do was start a food company in a pandemic.
And fast forward, now we have Ishii, and we sell black sesame oatmeal in a lot of grocery stores and on our website,
which is ishifoods.com. That's Y-I-S-H-I foods.com. Among the other flavors besides toasted sesame,
we have matcha latte flavor that tastes like Starbucks matcha latte, but it's vegan and no sugar. And it's also packed with protein.
Lynn says her growing number of fans at nearly 50 stores in Chicago, including Whole Foods, love that beyond having a clean nutrition profile, each flavor is functional too. Like that matcha for vitality, the toasted black sesame for energy, which you'll need plenty of if you're starting your own business. And if that's you, Lynn Jiang has some advice.
I encourage all entrepreneurs to be their own advocate. You are your own marketing person, and it has really worked well for me.
I think that's pretty good advice. You can read more about Lynn and her story at Yishi, that's Y-I-S-H-I, foods.com. From the farm to your belly, a reminder that June has been dairy month, so how about finishing it off with some ice cream? That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
All right. We have Melanie Lieberman, who is senior travel editor of The Points Guy, thepointsguy.com, joining us on the line right now. Hi, Melanie.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Not bad at all.
Well, it looks like travel is rebounding. One of my kids is getting on a plane on Saturday and heading off to Greece and Italy. And I said to him, I didn't even know those countries were open yet. He says, Mom, absolutely. Like, I could have gone to Iceland.
Yeah, so, things are reopening really fast.
I'll say, and he's right on it. But I think that that's one of the trends that we're seeing out there is that young people are getting on planes, whereas their parents maybe aren't as quickly doing that.
Absolutely. And it's surprising because typically people who, you know, have a little bit more flexible spending power and more time off are really at the forefront of travel. But this year we're seeing young people, particularly Gen Z and millennials, as well as parents with children under 18, really driving the summer travel surge we're seeing everywhere.
Yeah, it's really crazy. I am getting on a plane. I'm going to go see my sister in New York over the holiday weekend. And I'm expecting this plane to be packed, just like all the other planes that I've been getting on over the last couple of months. It looks to me like the industry just can't, either it just can't hire enough people, it can't get enough pilots to fly the planes, maybe it can't get enough people to clean the planes that are sitting in the desert. What's going on with all the flights that American is canceling and Delta is changing flights and Southwest is changing flights? It feels like everything's still in a bit of a flux.
Yeah, what we're seeing is really the combination of a number of factors. The fact is that demand for travel came back really fast and much faster than the supply could come back online throughout the pandemic. Not just airlines, but rental car companies, hotels, cruise lines, of course, you know, had to slash staff, had to, you know, cut their inventory. And that demand has come back so much faster than airlines are able to add flights to their schedules or TSA could staff up at airports. So that's what's driving a lot of the crowding that we're seeing. And also one of the reasons prices are so much higher than people might be expecting coming out of a pandemic.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, I looked at the gas prices and I thought, you know, AAA is telling us that a historic number of people will be on the road this holiday weekend, and they're going to be paying like in excess of $3.50 a gallon for gas. And there don't seem to be a whole lot of deals out there for airline tickets either. Are you seeing any good deals right now?
For people who are thinking of traveling and are really looking for deals or letting deals drive their decisions, one of the best things travelers could do is actually what you're doing. And, you know, city vacations can offer better deals. That's partially because right now demand continues to be extremely strong for beach getaways, national and state parks, those sort of outdoor gateways that we've seen rise in popularity, not only throughout the pandemic, but also they're very classic summer travel destinations in general. So for people who are looking for deals, flexibility is key and being open-minded to traveling to different destinations.
Well, that sounds like always a good thing to go to different destinations. A lot of people, though, want to travel internationally again. And I don't even, is Canada open? I mean, Canada, by the way, don't go to the Northwest where they're broiling at 121 yesterday. Up in the Vancouver area, I think, was they hit some sort of insane record. But are we seeing Canada open up anytime soon?
Canada is one of the destinations that, in fact, has continued to really tighten their border restrictions throughout the pandemic. While so much of the world has been really quick to reopen and eager to welcome back travelers, Canada has not really budged. Their border is still shut. They recently extended that border closure. And in general, that trajectory has been one of increasingly tightened restrictions. So for people who are thinking about traveling abroad, some of the best bets include the Caribbean, Mexico, which has remained open this entire time, and Europe, which is in the process of reopening, like you said, and reopening very quickly.
All right. So that sounds pretty good. What about Asia? Because, I mean, this is obviously where coronavirus all started, was back in Asia, you know, a year and a half ago. Particularly China. Any idea if Asia is looking to reopen, or are they still struggling under coronavirus and the new Delta variant?
Yeah, this has been a really challenging situation. And in general, what I would say, while individual countries, you know, are certainly taking different paths, Thailand is one that has been pretty outspoken about their reopening plans. We're really encouraging travelers to think about destinations, whether you know, booked now or you're watching for the near future, places that, again, have been on that open trajectory most of this time, because a destination, even like the UK, which has continued to tighten their restrictions, you know, since they're reopening, then closes, that's going to be really challenging if you're thinking about booking travel plans.
Melanie Lieberman, senior travel editor of The Points Guy. You can find more at thepointsguy.com. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.